Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited to talk about this week's big new release, Alien Covenant, with JB.
And this will be our first ever 15-minute episode.
Perhaps. We are recording this on Sunday night because we want to get this out to all you good people on Monday morning, which means that we are both sacrificing watching the new Twin Peaks in real time. We will be time shifting like those kids with their VCRs.
I wanted to record a podcast, but then my arms bent back.
Nice. So I'm excited.
You already used that on
Twin
Peaks.
I probably did. It's the greatest line of all time. I tried to get all the way through the show again prior to the new one, but I only got through the solving of season 2, episode 9, where the reveal happens.
I remember very well watching that show when it was originally on, and it was unlike anything else on television. Yeah, the premiere was on Sunday night, the regular show was on Thursday nights, and Thursday night was garbage night. So after the show, I had to go in the garage and put the garbage out, and it was dark, and I didn't want to go. After they solve it, the show sort of has diminishing returns.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of the episodes that came after that, but good Lord, talk about groundbreaking. I think if you put that on today, it would still be groundbreaking.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So we're going to be talking about Alien Covenant. We will talk spoiler-free pretty briefly, I think.
30 seconds, yeah, maybe 45.
It's hard to talk about, obviously, without getting into spoilers. But
what is James Franco doing in the movie?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Driving home, it was like, is this one of his performance art things?
I believe, and I didn't have a chance to actually check them out, there's two little short movies that you're also supposed to watch. One involves Michael Fassbender and Noomi Rapace and kind of fills in.
Okay.
And then I think the other one involves James Franco. So maybe it was stuff that was cut out of the movie and they released it separately. But listen, we're going to get to that.
If it's important, it should be in the movie.
Well,
I don't need homework on my iPad.
Right. You got to watch this stuff before you see the movie. No. Make it part of the movie. Anyway, so we're going to talk spoiler-free and then we'll get into spoilers. We're going to talk what we've seen lately. Quickly, I want to thank the recent donors to F This Movie who are, I guess, sponsoring this week's episode. Luke Ciancio, Grant Hurlbert, Crystal Guerrero, and Scott Crocco. I hope I'm saying that right. Thank you very much. And we hope that you enjoy this discussion of Alien Covenant.
We love you. And if you're not one of those four people, pause the podcast or turn the volume way down. If you're listening in the car, and now you four, lean into your headphones. We love you. That was just for them.
Jay Bones, have you seen anything good lately?
Well, I went to the Turner Classic Movies Fathom Events screening of Smokey and the Bandit.
Yes.
These are not usually well attended, or maybe it's just my choice of theaters. They have to be well attended somewhere because they keep doing them. I go to Deer Park for a number of reasons, and this one was actually very well attended.
Because of Bert.
I think so. I have a feeling it's not, what's the word, that it hasn't expired yet. Some charity is having a big thing, and they had a promo for it before the movie, and it was actually Bert, the way he looks now, which was a little off-putting. And I don't know how much a raffle ticket costs. It's probably a virtual raffle ticket, but I'm sure if you Google Burt Reynolds Trans Am, some charity is giving away a fully restored 77 Trans Am that's been autographed in two places by Burt. And you also get a hat, like the hat he wears in the film, and that's been autographed by him, and it looked like it was for a really good cause. So Google it and you can win the Trans Am.
Is Sally Field involved in any way?
Well,
does
no,
she come with the car?
Because remember, he put out that book
right
a year or two ago,
yeah,
and said it was the love of my life.
Yes.
And so all these journalists scrambled to Sally Field, and Sally Field was no. No. And I felt bad for Bert, but my God, do they have chemistry in that movie.
Yeah.
And it was great to see it on a big screen. Walking out with the crowd, I heard several of the gentlemen talk about the car and how one of them had purchased the black Trans Am with all the, you know, like 3 months before the movie came out. So then he's telling the story to his group of friends, like, and everyone thought I bought it because of the movie, but I had to tell them I bought it before the movie.
I liked the band before they got popular.
I'm ahead of the crowd.
I liked them when they were the Quarrymen.
And Ben Mankiewicz, always ready with some trivia facts, noted that at the end of his career, Hitchcock had a bungalow on the Universal lot. If you take the tram tour, they still point it out, and there's a little plaque there commemorating it. And I guess on Wednesdays, he used to screen a film for fun. And according to his daughter, Patricia, at the end of his life, Smokey and the Bandit was one of his favorite movies.
That is outstanding.
And they told you this before the show, so I'm watching it, and like, because last week there's this weird syndicated channel we get on our cable with reruns of Dick Cavett, and I watched the Dick Cavett Alfred Hitchcock interview where he basically just tells the same stories over and over again. So I had Alfred Hitchcock on the brain, and I'm watching Smokey and the Bandit trying, what was it? What was it about this? And my conclusion was, it's the editing. Because if you look at Smokey and the Bandit, it's very much cobbling a narrative. There's a lot of creative editing going right on so that the cars are all going the right way and just technical stuff. Or
I say it's Bert.
Yeah, that he had an unrequited man crush on Bert. But someone must be going to these screenings because they used to just announce next month's, but they've announced all of them until Christmas.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
sure if you go to the website, you can see it. Next month, they're doing two, the original Godfather and Some Like It Hot. And almost everything they're showing coming up is really, really good, but in a lot of cases duplicates what the Chicago Film Critics Association has already done at the Elk Grove, because I'm guessing it's Childress likes the anniversaries.
Right.
And you guys are getting to the anniversaries before TCM
does.
Oh,
good. Well, that's good.
So they're doing Casablanca, which, right. And they're doing Bonnie and Clyde, and they're two steps behind Chicago Film Critics.
Catch up, jokers at TCM. Anything besides Smokey and the Bee?
I think that's it. It's been I usually don't say this because I usually go to a lot of movies, but it's been a busy time.
Yeah.
But a rewarding time, too.
I only have two movies that I'll talk about briefly. I saw this weekend's other major new release, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul, because my 8-year-old son really loves that series of books. He is now on his at least second run through the series. We don't always read them in order. We kind of jump around, but we've just been rereading the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. And they had made three previous films, and they're fine. Like, he's watched them on DVD or on Nickelodeon, and they're fine. They're not great movies, but I'm perfectly comfortable with him watching them. They're well made enough. The cast is pleasant. Like, they're inoffensive. And this new one is a garbage fire.
Oh, boy.
They've recast all of the roles because the kid basically aged out of middle school by now. So they recast with, I mean, I don't want to take shots at child actors, but some really bad child actors. Alicia Silverstone and Tom Everett Scott now play the parents. So that's weird because they were who I was watching as a teenager in movies about teenagers. And now, well, anyway,
we all know Tom Everett Scott is the wrong guy who marries Emma Stone
right.
in La La Land. He's the Ralph Bellamy of La La Land.
There's, you know, CGI puke and pigs shitting scene where the kid hides in a shower while a man shits on a toilet and we hear all the poo hitting the water. It's like you probably could have cut away before we had to hear this in this children's movie.
What is this rated?
PG.
And you were telling me about this. My God, that was yesterday. And it flies so far under my radar that I wasn't aware that so many of them had been made.
Yeah.
I thought because of the iconic book cover that they were animated.
Right. So no, sadly no.
I'm woefully ignorant of the Wimpy Kid.
My son, in his awful taste, enjoyed the movie again because I think it's these are the characters from the books that I like, and they're acting things out from the books that I've read, and so I am enjoying this. But it was not a great watch for me. We did go to the theater where we host those screenings that you were talking about, and so they had the new poster up, and it says Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and so I pointed that to him, and he was excited. And then on his own, he noticed my name underneath and got very excited. It was really like, cool. Dad's famous. Yeah, it was cute.
I didn't realize that was coming in July.
July.
Until Adam pointed it out yesterday, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be fun.
If you're in the Chicago area.
The other new-ish release I saw is a movie called A Dark Song, which is an English or Irish horror film, limited release, VOD, that, you know, the usual IFC Midnight model. It had been on my radar, and I know our friend Chaby had said that he had liked it, and I hadn't seen it, and then I was listening to Shockwaves this weekend, and Elra Kane was talking about it, and that was kind of what finally pushed me over, and I'm really glad that I watched it, because it's really good. It's really good. And it's a movie that I think a lot of people won't have patience for because it's interesting. There are horror movies where we say, well, nothing happens. And then there are movies that we call slow burn. And slow burn means nothing happens for 85 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
And then in the last 5 minutes, something happens. So I would probably call this slow burn. It's about a man and a woman. It's essentially just these two people in a house. And I don't even want to say what they're doing because I don't think the movie reveals that right away. They're working on something together. And the movie is sort of interested in the process of what that entails. And it was very interesting to watch it the same weekend as Alien Covenant, not to spoil my feelings on Alien Covenant, but I think one movie pretends to be about ideas, and one movie actually is about ideas, and the one that I really liked is the one that's actually about ideas. So if you are inclined, check out A Dark Song, currently on VOD. I rented it on Amazon Video on Demand for like $6, and it's well worth it.
I'm making a mental note, and you mentioned Chaby, who I love. I've been listening to his album on vinyl, and it's been changing the physical structure of my brain. And I'm just dying for him to see that crazy thing that I saw at the Nashville Film Festival. I think unlikely, but I'm dying to know what Chaby would have to say about Bloodlands, the Bloodlands from Romania and Australia, respectively.
And you know, at last week we were talking about Black Coat's Daughter, and then 2 days later it showed up on Amazon Prime, so you should check it out. I think you'll like it. Let's talk about Alien Covenant.
First, the good news.
Yes.
There are parts of it that I found entertaining.
Sure.
I also thought it was better than Prometheus, although that's a pretty low bar.
I think it's both better and worse.
I was talking to one of my students this week, and he, I guess, went to the screening Thursday night, and he was very excited about it, and he proceeded to rank the Alien films, and he said that Alien Covenant was the fourth best Alien film. And I thought, interesting. And I put my toe in the water and said, so the original is first? And he said, yes. And I said, and then the James Cameron Aliens is second? And he said, yes. And I said, I'm at a loss.
Everything else
for
is
what's
just,
third.
You're just throwing dishes up in the air.
And he
that's
said,
a thing. That's a thing people do.
He said third was Prometheus.
Interesting.
And then fourth was this one.
Okay.
And I said, no love for the Fincher film? And he said, no, the Fincher film is a mess.
It is a mess. As is Alien Resurrection, they are both messes. I think I prefer both of them to these two new films.
As do I, because we have Fincher's heavily played with version of Alien, and then we have is Resurrection
Jean-Pierre Jeunet, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
We have his batshit crazy take on it, and here's another Alien. But I did enjoy Covenant a lot more than Prometheus, but I felt, and we've discussed this phenomenon before, that it seemed to be two films fighting against each other, that there's two very specific things going on. And I'm fairly certain that Damon Lindelof had nothing to do with this film.
His name is not in the credits.
But because this ostensibly is the sequel to Prometheus, there's things that come up in Prometheus that I would label Lindelof things based on Lost.
Okay.
And this film, Alien Covenant, feels compelled to pursue
right
these ideas. And just like what you just said, it seems to think that it's about ideas.
This was always my issue with Prometheus as well. And we did a podcast on Prometheus. You can go back and listen to it. I'm fascinated reading the reactions to these two films because they're both proving to be polarizing. I kind of thought Alien Covenant wouldn't be as much, but it is, in much the same way that Prometheus is, in that people's reactions are kind of very strong one way or the other. And I don't agree with the people who love Prometheus or who love Alien Covenant, because I don't, but one of the things that they seem to be putting forth is that it's this movie that's about these grand ideas. And I just don't agree with that.
No, I think, neither do I.
I think it says that it's about these ideas, but that's not the same as actually exploring them in any way.
I agree. And so,
just throwing out the word creation doesn't mean that your movie is interested in creation.
Because the parts of the film that we're talking about are basically what I compared it to in the long ride home in the car, where my lovely wife Jan and I are trying to unpack this, is prequel syndrome or table setting. And I went back to the famous Patton Oswalt joke about the Star Wars prequels. Right. Are you interested in seeing Darth Vader as a kid? And
do you like ice cream? Here's a bag of rock salt.
And we were actually debating what the actual joke was, because I guess I didn't remember it correctly. But basically, Prometheus and Alien Covenant are there, seemingly, to answer the question, where did those beasts come from?
Which I think ultimately comes down to a matter of taste. I'm not interested in that story.
I'm not interested at all.
So maybe we're not the audience for these movies.
And this comes back to what we were talking about last week, about that everything has to be explained,
right.
And part of it, of course, is wringing some more money out of this intellectual property. But in The Void, I don't care what set the Doctor on his path.
Nope.
And in these two films, I don't care how this really iconic monster got its start.
Because, again, I would argue that it robs it of its power. And I'm able to still watch Alien and divorce myself from what has come since.
I would hope that everyone would be able to do that.
And still just say, holy shit, there's an alien in space.
Right. And in the middle of this film, certainly not for the first maybe 20 minutes and not certainly for the last 20 minutes, in the middle of Covenant is an alien movie.
Yes.
That, if you divorce certain elements from it, is very much an alien movie and almost a remake of the first one.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Yes.
And I thought parts of that film worked, although one of the things I liked the most, which I wasn't expecting to, was Danny McBride. I thought he pulled it off.
Yes.
But I believe it was a tweet from our friend Eric Childress, who did not like the film at all, who pointed out that to make us care about the characters, they're constantly having people be married to each other.
Yes.
As if them just being crewmen together, crew people together,
right,
wouldn't be enough to,
correct,
to pull our heartstrings when something goes awry.
You can do it once, okay, and they do in the first minutes of the movie, and then to just keep doing it was so strange.
Right.
That they're like, you 12, you guys are all married
are
to each other.
Right.
We're going to teach you how to fly ships.
Right. It seemed odd. there's a number. Can we get into spoilers now?
Let's. Well, man.
I know.
Did you like? You didn't like the movie. Yesterday, you sounded a little bit more positive.
I liked the middle part.
Okay. And I don't know if I did.
I thought the middle part was a good time, although very derivative of other films. And I don't know. Is it a spoiler to suggest that this film contains? Here he goes to a clever mime, so the audience can't see what he's doing. Is it a spoiler to suggest that this film contains?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I'm talking here. Oh, I wish this were on video. I just did a pantomime where my hand was a puppet.
He pretended to masturbate everyone. He's constantly doing it
like a zoo ape.
I've pressed charges. It's really hard
when
to concentrate
we do the podcast,
on this
it's so
podcast.
Hard because I have to be 100 feet legally. Legally, I have to be 100 feet from Patrick. That this film...
We have a little Dixie cup up to the microphone attached to a string. It's the only way we know how to do this.
That this film, perhaps not, contains one or more chest bursters.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, was it just the novelty? Where in my mind, the famous iconic one in the first movie... just beats the hell out of all of...
Of course. For a number of reasons. One being the element of surprise.
Sure.
Here's the thing. Alien is one of these movies that I wasn't able to discover because of the way that I saw it years after it was already iconic, years after I'd heard it talked up again and again and again. And it's one of these movies, Escape from New York is one of these movies, The Warriors is one of these movies, where I saw all of them, I liked all of them, but it was like, oh, okay, so that's what that is, because I've been hearing about it for so long. And as time goes by, and the more times I see them, the higher each one grows in my estimation. And Alien is basically, I think, a perfect movie.
Yeah.
And so to see this, which is like this weird imitation... at times feels almost like a fan film, and yet it's from the same guy who made Alien. I can't connect those two things in my brain. The reason that I say that I think Covenant is both better and worse is that I found Covenant to be watchable. I wasn't bored. I think it's pretty well put together. And I didn't find it as frustrating in the moment as I did Prometheus. Prometheus was constantly pushing me out with stupid shit. But I think it's worse because I think it aims lower. I think for all of Prometheus's faults, and I don't believe that it's actually exploring big ideas, but it is at least trying to chart a little bit of its own course.
It's ambitious.
Yes.
And...
not as ambitious as I think some people give it credit for being.
No, but to be cynical, we could argue that Alien Covenant is the film we get when there's a reaction against what Prometheus was trying to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, okay, let's go back to doing Alien, and there's just enough of the Prometheus stuff to... I appreciate that it's more of a sequel than I expected it to be. I kind of ignored trailers and stuff, so the one trailer I saw... looked like, oh, they're doing Alien again, but there's more people in the crew, and I don't care about that. So the fact that it is more of a direct sequel to Prometheus than I expected, I was like, well, I give you credit for not just washing your hands of the whole thing. I honestly was with the movie, I would say, for about the first 30 minutes, until the first guy... this is not a spoiler, but we're going to move into spoilers in about 10 seconds. A character steps on a spore, and that was the moment where the movie lost me. But honestly, up until then, I liked the photography. I liked the score. I actually thought the score sounded very... I think there are some things aesthetically where Ridley Scott is trying to tie this to Alien. So I think a lot of the visuals and the color timing at times look a lot like Alien. And I thought the score sounded like something out of 1980 at times, in a good way, not in that annoying, like, isn't this retro way? But it reminded me of an older score, and I really liked that. I mean, the cast is doing their best. I think most of them do what they can with the parts they've been given.
Yeah, a lot of them aren't given a lot to work with.
Catherine Waterston, you know, doesn't have much to do, but she's trying. Billy Crudup is trying. Fassbender's always great. You know, he's obviously the MVP. I agree with you about Danny McBride. I appreciate that the movie doesn't have to make him comic relief all the time.
Right.
Or almost ever, actually. This is not a very jokey movie. It's nice to see Amy Simons in a $150 million movie. There's a scene with Catherine Waterston and Billy Crudup that I think is one of the best scenes in the movie, where they sit down and debate, do we do this or do we do this?
And one of my disappointments was, and maybe this is just American filmmaking in 2017, that you had said that this film wants to be about ideas and perhaps fails, that we get the inkling
right.
of ideas that right. perhaps at some point someone wanted to pursue, because one of the things I found most fascinating that was just dropped
yep.
was that Crudup is a man of faith.
Right.
And that leads to other characters looking at him in a certain way, and maybe we can explore that, especially if one of the things you're trying to talk about in this film is creation and
yep.
what is involved in that, and what it just
yeah.
Well, that's the exposition part, and now you know what's the one thing that makes him different, and I actually,
which by the way is more than most characters get.
Right.
At least he gets that.
But I wanted to see that
100%.
Pay off. And this film, at times, can we please be in the
yes,
spoilers?
Now, okay. That, spoilers for Alien Covenant coming up. Turn it off.
At times, this film so willfully hate fucks the audience in a lot of different ways that it made me very angry at the end, because I am not a shrinking violet. I can put up with something being downbeat. But in terms of this film and the films that came before and the genre that we're talking about, and I don't want to talk about what's getting me mad right now. I'll wait a little bit.
Okay.
But that bothered me. I thought it was interesting that Fassbender, who plays two different cyborgs, or I'm not using the right science fiction term, he's a fake person.
He's an android.
Like Ian Holm.
Right.
Which I also thought was interesting. It shows you the difference between the 70s and today. In the 70s, the fake guy is Ian Holm, who, and now in 2017, it's Michael Fassbender.
Okay, got
like
it.
The perfect
right,
male.
Right.
But so there's been an upgrade. that when Fassbender is one of these, let me call them replicants, he's using his own voice. And
right.
then when he's Walter, he's using the voice he came up with for Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
So I found that very entertaining.
Actually, neither of them are his own voice, because the English one is not his voice either.
Oh, it isn't?
No, he's Irish.
Could it be that I've never actually heard his real voice?
It's possible. He's,
because it's
he's
a
often,
number of
yeah.
trick voices?
I appreciated the fact. So I will say, in the very first scene of this movie, which I feel was rather unnecessary, where Guy Pearce makes his return.
And I thought that was the most Lindelof-y scene.
Well, and that was where I first turned against the movie, and it did win me back. But when Guy Pearce says, "What's your name?" and he has to look at a statue of David and then say David, as though we might not get that, so that's annoying. But I so appreciate the fact that they named the other android Walter, because clearly they're being named after Walter Hill and David Giler.
Oh, I didn't put that together,
which I thought was nice.
Thank you, screenwriter.
Yeah, just when a movie can at least remind me of Walter Hill, I'll
nice
be happy.
Tip of the hat. Walter did seem odd at times. So we get this weird scene that's right out of Lost, the worst parts of Lost, the statue with the three toes part of Lost.
Right.
And you're right, because I think even if you never saw Prometheus, I think you'd be able to figure it out without the opening scene. That being said, later in the film, when all of our human crew is really up against it and a hooded figure appears and says, "Follow me if you want to live," I knew who that was.
Of course.
Well, no, because I talked to some other people and they didn't immediately know. Maybe it's the law of economy of characters.
I mean, the movie tells you up front this is who this is going to be, because it reminds you of this character, and he's still out there. Without that scene, I think that might have been more of like a huh, but it tells you up front, David's in this movie. He's going to come back.
And because we're talking about artificial humans, and because Ridley Scott also made a film called Blade Runner, and because my wife is currently obsessed with Blade Runner because she's writing a book about
currently?
It.
Currently?
That she's always been obsessed with Blade Runner, and the only reason she married me is there was a short window where I did a magnificent Harrison Ford impression.
Is it as good as mine? when I do the voiceover?
I had a feeling that would come up during this podcast. But the first shot in the film is the human eye.
Yeah.
And that's straight out of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And later in the film, when our heroine puts the nail into David's chin, David shouts, "That's the spirit,"
yeah,
which is right from Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But my lovely wife, Jan, who, let's face it, is smarter than I, came up with the following, that in Blade Runner, you see artificial humans imitating the best part of ourselves mm-hmm. by being noble and saving a life, mm-hmm. and therefore Roy Batty, Roy Neary, that's from Close Encounters.
Oh, wow.
He's gone movie crazy. That's how Roy Batty redeems himself. And
Harrison Ford's dangling from a ledge, and he's just fucking around with mashed potatoes.
Pull me up.
Give me a hand.
Pull
this
me
means
up.
Something.
This means something.
Quiet down over there.
Put the potatoes away. Pull me up. That in Blade Runner, Ridley Scott was interested in the better part of humanity, or how you remember someone who's gone. And Jan was comparing it to, I never knew this, that Ridley Scott was set to do Dune, but Dune was taking forever,
yeah.
and abandoned Dune to make Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And it's my wife's feeling that he did it because his older brother had just died. And there are aspects of Blade Runner that speak to how we remember the dead.
Yeah.
And Ridley Scott's great sorrow over the loss of his brother. And then in this film, we have artificial humanity who is trying to do something by going for the worst of human personality traits, and that is hubris, that he is going to become the creator, a very popular trope in science fiction. And again, Jan just thought that was interesting and thought that maybe Ridley Scott's new obsession with this darker view of humanity is based on his younger brother's death and how his younger brother's death was different than his older brother's death. I don't know. I'm still working it out. I thought it was fascinating to think about, especially when you consider the ending of this film. Now, what was your feeling about the ending, and did you see it coming 15 minutes early?
I saw it coming the moment they landed on a planet where David was there. As soon as we had two Fassbender androids, I knew what the ending was going to be.
Because I'm wondering what person in the theater has not figured out, major spoiler alert, that it's David on the ship at the end. Is that not clear to anyone paying attention?
This is a whole conversation that could end up monopolizing this podcast, but I was reading on Twitter. The film critic Matt Zoller cites, who gave Alien Covenant a 4-star review on RogerEbert.com, and claims that it is the third best Alien movie, and that subsequent viewings may even bump it up higher, which I just cannot get on board with, was tweeting out that everyone who is complaining about how they could see that coming is missing that Ridley Scott did not structure it as a reveal. It's not supposed to be a twist. And I just can't agree with that because I think he does structure
again,
it as a twist.
This goes back to, you know, I mentioned Hitchcock at the beginning of the podcast. This goes back to Hitchcock. Then are we dealing with something where the filmmakers want the audience to have information that the characters on screen don't have, so we're sitting there thinking, figure it out.
Yes.
Get to the point.
But the language of the film doesn't do that.
No.
Because the language of the film, even when Walter is alone watching the video feed, apparently showing relief when Catherine Waterston is still alive, which
yes.
we read as, oh, because he has feelings for her or whatever is sort of interesting about this movie. I understand that, you know, the fact that he cuts away while they're fighting and we don't actually see one of them die. Like, yes, that is very much on the nose. And yes, 95% of us would say, oh, well, that's because David is still alive. We don't see him die because he's the one who's going to get back on the ship. But I also think it could just be sloppy filmmaking. I don't know, because aside from that, there's nothing about the language of the film that tells us in the audience, this is David pretending to be Walter, and you guys should know that even though they don't.
Right. That it comes, it's sort of, to me, it comes across as a surprise if you haven't been paying attention.
Right.
But my bigger problem is, massive spoiler, just like in the first two Alien films, our two leads, the two people that we're left with, perform more than heroically to vanquish the threat.
Right.
And in the first two Alien films, your reward is you get to live and have a life, and you triumph, then everything is right with the world. And it's not that I'm Pollyanna and I need that as an ending, but if we are at all emotionally invested in these two characters, and I was, their fate in Alien Covenant is demented.
Yeah, no, the movie's just kind of a big fuck you everywhere, and I don't know why this.
It's like, at that point, I think I'm arguing that I like the middle part even more than perhaps I even said, because I honestly cared about these two characters, and it was like a kick in the balls. I mean, it really was.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so it's not just me.
No, I don't really ever like that ending in horror movies, and it's a very popular trope in horror movies, but I'm always of the mind that, like, hey, if you beat the monster, you deserve to live. You know, unless it's Night of the Living Dead, like, obviously there are exceptions where it's like, oh, you're making a point. Okay, but if it's just like, ah, fuck you, we need one more little thing, go fuck yourself.
And again, not to make this about Night of the Living Dead, I would argue
we certainly can.
That the screenwriter, well, that would be more, have we ever?
No.
There's something. At the party the other day, we were already talking about Scary Movie Month because it's May and we want it to be October.
It got a little cold here, and I was like, hey, now.
We want our lives to go quicker. we've never done a podcast about Hammer, and I thought that might be interesting.
Yeah.
But if we've never tackled Night of the Living Dead, here's my point. That George Romero and the screenwriters are not hate-fucking us with the ending of that film, because the more you explore the film, and I wish this was original to me, but it is not, as much as we like Ben, he's wrong.
Right.
All through the film,
right,
what eventually saves Ben is what Harry, who we hate, has been suggesting very loudly.
Right.
So it's much more complicated than just a kick in the balls.
Right.
In Alien Covenant, it was a kick in the balls to
me. Yeah. I had something to say about the two androids, and now I forget what it is. God damn it. There were so many things that I did not love. The introduction of a new alien, just because to go back to what we were saying, I'm not interested in the idea of, like, these were created as some sort of chemical weapon and David has been experimenting. He experimented on Elizabeth Shaw. Hey, did you like her in that last movie? Well, guess what? Like, fuck her and fuck all of you for wanting her to survive after what she went through.
It's just like drawings, but it's still...
Oh, no, we see her opened up on a table at one point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the drawings. But, I mean, the pathology of the alien is so well established with the egg and the face hugger and then the chest bursting and then the little snake with braces and then it gets bigger, that, just like you said, when he glances up against that thing that releases the spores, it came across as odd because the pattern of the alien is so well established. I'm like, what is this? And then that turns out to be an alien too. So now there's two
black
ways.
Black goo makes an alien, but then if you experiment long enough, you can make an egg that makes a face hugger that makes an alien. Again, in the first film, like you said, there's this little creature who comes out of an egg and he implants a thing and that creates an alien. That makes sense as some sort of just other biology, some sort of alien thing. When you're saying I engineered a monster that first you have to make an egg and then that's going to make a face hugger and then it has to implant an embryo in a human and then that's going to make an alien. Why would you engineer a monster that like this takes 4 or 5 steps? Like, why? What is the point?
Again, it's just a curious evolution of an unknown beast. Well, this is a weird thing.
What a circuitous way to create a monster.
Oh, David said, okay, here's what we're going to do.
It's like Dr. Frankenstein instead builds the mom and then finds a guy to fuck her, and then the Frankenstein baby comes out. He's like, it's alive!
I need to find someone who will fuck the mother of Frankenstein. And then that becomes, if the 30s was the 2000s, then that's the prequel movie to Frankenstein. It's called Mother of Frankenstein.
Right.
And we get all the Frankenstein mom fucking.
Soon to be part of the universal shared universe.
But if that's the case, and I agree that you, with these prequels, you always run up against the problem of story carpentry, then what's the spore?
I'm sure it's something to do with Prometheus.
The spore would seem to be a better way to do it because it's faster.
Well, who knows what the fucking timing is on this thing? Like, the spore, they got aliens popping out of them before they get back to the ship. John Hurt was alive for a while before an alien popped out. Billy Crudup, like, takes a short nap, and that scene is such garbage because that's them thinking that they're paying off that scene. First of all, I don't like... No, follow me. Here, just look in there. It's safe. He does all that. Fine. Characters do stupid things. But he awakens and just says, what do you believe in? That's the only thing he says. And that's them thinking that they're paying off this idea.
Not at all.
Of him being a man of faith, which could have been, like you said, interesting in a movie that's supposed to be about creation, that's supposed to be about what do you believe in. That it was in that scene where he says to his wife, you know, they don't trust me because of my faith or whatever. I thought this is a movie that might actually address something that's happening in the country where you have this divide between kind of the religious right and other people or whatever, and might address it in an interesting way. And like, it's just dropped.
And I'm also in a rare moment going to take the form of an alien. No. That people on the right often have a problem with the way people on the right are portrayed
yes.
in popular entertainment.
Yes.
And I thought, well, this film could very well, like you just said, be an intelligent discussion. But it quickly falls in line with all of these films that people on the right and people of faith have problems with because, spoiler alert, Crudup is a tone-deaf, awful leader.
Right.
Perhaps a coward. And certainly out of touch with his unwillingness to acknowledge the death, which the crew then does on their own.
Right.
And he's wrong at every step. That conversation with Waterston that you talked about, she is dead right. And he is dead wrong.
Yes.
And we know that.
Yes. I mean, at the time that they have that conversation, he is not wrong. Do you know what I mean? What he's saying makes sense. Yes, he ends up being wrong, and he has to then apologize and be like, hey, look, I was wrong. I got us all killed. Huh?
And so there's that trope, which I objected to, only because I thought we might get something a little bit more nuanced.
Right. It's I don't want to be – here's the thing. As soon as you slap the name Alien on it, I think you are – you're coming at this from a higher pedigree. And so my expectations are just higher than if I was seeing Supernova or Event Horizon or any of the countless kind of alien ripoffs that we've had.
Especially
I expect
because
you,
it's Ridley
Alien. Scott.
Right, exactly. It, with all due respect to Fincher, this is Ridley Scott
right.
on his home turf.
I expect you to be better. And so there will be people who will say, like, well, why can't you just be happy with, like, this fun, cool monster movie? And that's fine, but time and again, the movie tries to elevate itself beyond that, which I could appreciate if I thought it succeeded at all. And there are times when it could have.
And I would have preferred a cool monster movie, but this film trips on itself constantly because it's not happy to just be a cool monster movie. It has to be about the act of creation.
And we get multiple scenes with characters just explaining shit to each other. Usually the Michael Fassbender, David character who's having to explain stuff. And this is not original to me, but I was reading in the comments section of, there's like a spoiler thread, I think, on Birth, Movies, Death. And so I was reading some of the comments there and the conversation around the film. And it was very interesting because, again, somebody pointed out, you know, if you take those first two movies as a double feature, they work so beautifully because the first movie is kind of about undergoing the most serious trauma that you can. And then the second movie is sort of about reclaiming your strength in the wake of that trauma. And what a great way to look at those two films, and you know, kind of makes you wish they just stopped there. But it also points out, to me, as flawed as Prometheus was, I'm guessing we said this on the podcast when we did it years ago, but you know, the Michael Fassbender performance is great, and his character in that movie is interesting because we don't really understand where he's coming from, and it could be a number of things. There seems to be a genuine curiosity about, it's much more Blade Runner than it is here, because there's a genuine curiosity about, well, what does it mean to be human? And he seems to be envious of humans and curious about humans and is genuinely interested in this idea of creation. And so we're watching him and we don't know, are his motivations evil or are they just misguided because he's pursuing this curiosity that he has? And in this movie, he's just evil.
It's made very specific.
He's just evil robot who wants to kill everyone, and we don't really know why, except that what he wants to create something new.
You know, something's wrong when the when a character insists that Wagner be played. Enormous brown shit hammer of obviousness.
I liked the scene with the two Fassbenders when he's giving him the little flute lesson.
Yeah, I like that scene too.
There are good moments here and there. Again, I don't think the movie is totally bad, but like Prometheus, it's so very frustrating, I think, because it once again fails at even trying to just be an Alien ripoff. I don't like the Alien stuff as much as you. Because I don't care for the CGI alien. I think the attacks are meaningless. Again, another interesting conversation in that same thread was like, wouldn't it be such a better movie? Wasn't Alien so good? Because you had people who didn't know what they were doing and yet who were trying to do all the right things. And they failed and they died. But they died in the pursuit of trying to do the right thing, as opposed to in Alien Covenant when everybody does stupid things and they're killed because they're stupid. It's like, it's that Friday the 13th model.
And thank you for bringing up Friday the 13th, because near the end of this, when we have the requisite, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We have the requisite.
Movie clock says, why are we getting this now?
And it just suddenly, you know, speaking of the 70s, suddenly there's two characters taking a shower, and I'm like,
in the last 15 minutes of the movie,
did I step out of my own reality and now I'm at a drive-in watching a movie in high school? And two people take a shower with predictable results.
Right. And so that's what I was getting to, is either the, you know, so we don't care about the characters because they do stupid things, because we don't know enough about them, because there are too many of them. I mean, they're just so disposable. And so it just becomes, they're all cannon fodder, you know, basically, as opposed to us investing in some of them living and some of them dying. And then it becomes an exercise in, well, how can we kill them in wacky ways? So let's have the alien punch through the guy's head in the shower. And so none of that stuff for me works as a horror movie. And again, I know there's people listening who are like, but you love horror movies and how is this different? I don't know. It just is. There was a discussion earlier this week about Jurassic World where I was taken to task about why did I have such a problem with the assistant's death being so mean-spirited in Jurassic World. That happens in horror movies all the time. And for me, it's just, it didn't fit in the tone of that movie. It doesn't belong in that movie.
Yes.
And that's some of my issue with
Alien
Covenant.
I would argue the shower scene here, too.
Right.
Going back to what we were saying about the cast that sort of left adrift, little by little, I'm coming to really enjoy Damien Bashir. I came to him from Hateful Eight, where I think...
My God, is he great in that movie.
Right? And it really seemed like with the paltry material he was given, he was trying to do something in this, but he's not well served by the script or the direction.
Again, his one thing, I think, is he's the gay one.
Right.
Which, okay, great. We finally have two gay characters in an Alien movie in 2017. That's progress.
But because it's 2017, they could have been legally married. So now we're back to the problem where, well, American audiences will only care if someone loses a spouse. We're so callous.
It's so bizarre.
That death alone will not pull
it
out.
And it's like the motivating factor for every character in this movie is, you know, there's a term for that. They call it fridging when a male character is motivated only by the death of his wife, girlfriend, family. When that's what gives him agency.
Why is it called fridging?
I think because it has to do with like the wife being stuffed in the fridge. I don't know if that comes from a direct, I'm sure it comes from one specific example. I don't know what it is, but, and this is a movie that's essentially full of that, right?
Because again, in the car on the way home, we were asking ourselves, did they recruit married couples?
Right,
or
that's
is it
what
so
saying.
Lonely in space? Right. Did they all get
Everyone
married?
Everyone paired up.
They got
Damien
married.
Damien Bashir wasn't even gay when they took off. He was just like, well, there's only so many people here.
They got married on the flight, and Billy Crudup, the man of faith, is the one who married them. Like on a boat where the captain can.
Right. Marry. So we get. When the black goo, which again I just did not like, I don't like the black goo as a concept, and so I will repeat, maybe I'm not the audience for these movies because it's exploring ideas that I'm not interested in, because now we have David creating aliens, there are engineers creating aliens, they can't just be fucking aliens, right? Anyway, so we get the black goo in the ear, we get the shot into the ear.
Oh, yes.
That's very impressive. Anyway. And the result is essentially we get one monster that pops out of the back, and then we get one that pops out of the mouth. And I'm like, oh, okay, so these ain't your parents' face huggers, pussies. But then we get chest bursters, I should have said. But now, then we do get a chest burster later on with Billy Crudup in a scene that is in every one of these. And here's where I'm a hypocrite, because on the one hand, I'm saying, like, quit trying to mess around with it. Quit trying to do something new.
And then
we get to Billy Crudup. I'm like, Jesus, this again.
Because that comes across. I think the low point for me where I'm really checking out is one of these little terror beasts is born. And David, the replicant, is convinced he can tame them, communicate with them.
Breathe into its nostrils.
Right, breathe into its nostrils. And it's this little CGI creature that stands up.
It starts doing calisthenics.
Right. Say this out loud. I did not want to ruin the film for the other people in the theater. But in my mind, I was thinking, again, it's a full-size Michael Fassbender looking at a little tiny alien, and they're both imitating each other's actions. You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out,
right.
You put your left foot in, and you shake it all about.
This little CGI thing raising its arms like, I can't wait till I'm this big. It's so just misguided. I don't know.
I wanted to like it. The early reviews were good. I'm at my old stomping ground, that one theater that they left alone. It's in IMAX, but no glasses, so I'm happy with that. They must have showed a half an hour worth of trailers. Where did you wind up seeing it?
At Marcus, because it was at like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. That's the Marcus chain by our house is pushing the envelope about how early can we start and have people show up, which I love.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm an old man, and I'm awake at that time
of
day.
They were showing, when Guardians came out, they were showing it around 8 a.m.
I met my best at 9 o'clock in the morning.
There was another thing I wanted to say about the aliens. Oh, just that, again, the movie pays no attention to anything. It won't even play by its own rules. And again, I'm not this stickler for the gestational cycle of the xenomorph. And it takes this long, and so they need to make it take this long. But it just takes as long as the movie needs it to until the next scene in terms of how quickly they grow. At one point, a second one shows up because they kill one of them. And then it's like, oh, and there's a second one. Like, well, where the fuck did this thing come from? It's the movie just introduces things as it needs them without really, for lack of a better expression, seeding any of it.
And it's a cliche to say that when you're on a low budget, and certainly none of these films were low budget, but maybe there were technical constraints with the original Aliens because CGI didn't exist and they were doing things with men in suits and puppets and things, that the fact that CGI gives them an unlimited palette to do some of these things, when the alien is not yet big and black and is not a chest burster with braces, that sort of white dog-like creature, I'm marveling at how uninteresting and just awful it is.
Yeah.
And that I'm thinking back to the alien effects in the first two movies. And again, maybe this is nostalgia, but by not showing it for as long, it was more effective. This just came across as something unpleasant that I didn't want to watch. It was like watching a man being attacked by a dog.
Yeah, I mean, they just run around and screech and scramble. And I recognize that the aliens in Aliens kind of do that. The alien in the original film was more like, I'm going to hide over here.
Yeah.
He doesn't see me.
But that's another reason, to your earlier point, that the first two make a great double feature is because also that they're different genres.
Exactly.
That Alien is a horror movie for years and years. I think this started with Stephen King. It's a haunted house in outer space. And Aliens is very much an action movie.
Right.
So that's another reason why they complement each other.
So I will also ask this question, because Ridley Scott, like George Lucas before him, seems determined to revisit something that he made famous and kind of strip it of its mystery and strip it of its power and just answer questions that we don't need answering. And what were the engineers?
And
what
was speaking of the midichlorians.
Of course. And that's what the black goo is, right? But if we're to take the Ridley Scott mythology as canon, where these were biological weapons created by David, and we kind of already went through the weird circuitous life cycle, why is there a queen? And there's not in this movie, but Aliens introduces the idea of a queen laying many eggs.
Okay, well,
how do they advance to that?
That's going to be answered in the next chapter of the trilogy, because my off the top of my head answer is that the being continues to evolve. But again, where does the queen come in becomes the, so what I told you was true from a certain point of view of the alien.
What did you think of the scene, the kind of flashback of David dropping the goo bombs on the planet of engineers?
Well, I didn't like it. It seemed like that existed to explain why, when they come upon it, it looks like Pompeii. And also, one of my least favorite parts of Prometheus, and this is how that movie lost me in the first minute, is Prometheus begins with this white creature doing something mysterious and dropping something into a lake. I'm like, did I walk into the wrong movie?
He drinks the black goo and then starts to dissolve, and he's essentially seeding that planet with more black goo or aliens or more engineers.
Right.
I can't
so
remember.
All the stuff with the engineering race
right.
in Covenant seemed to be trying to explain a little bit more of that from... I'm 55 years old. I don't need anything explained to me anymore. I don't need any explanations. Here's this terrifying creature. Go!
Right. Again, for as flawed as the third and fourth movies are, I would consider myself a fan of that series. I find those movies watchable, even while flawed. Perhaps Ripley is my anchor. I don't know. Maybe that's the thing that's missing. but I like that. What I've always liked about the series is that all four of them, even though they take place in the same series, feel like they take place within completely different genres. You have a new filmmaker each time giving a very distinct stamp to each movie in the series. And that's pretty rare, I would say, in any franchise. You don't usually get that. And so it has been very disappointing to see Ridley Scott, who made the first perfect movie, come back and pursue a thread that I just could not be less interested in, and which to me tarnishes the legacy of this franchise.
And again, it's that weird marketing thing that nowadays we won't go see anything unless it's at least familiar to us in some way.
Right.
So for Prometheus and Alien Covenant, I'd rather have Ridley Scott make two new movies that
100%
right, that are about something makes completely new.
That, and that was always my argument with Prometheus, was take out all the alien shit. A new Ridley Scott science fiction movie. Great. Michael Fassbender playing an android. Fine. Those weird white dudes. Okay. Don't tie it into Alien whatsoever.
But that's the hook.
Right. And so this movie doubles down on making it more Alien. And I, like I said, I think it's a movie that is both better than Prometheus and worse.
Could we be looking at a situation where in perhaps, oh, I don't know, 6 months, even the people who are singing its praises, it'll sort of be...
I don't think so, because in the week leading up to Alien Covenant, you know, my Facebook thread or Twitter, whatever, it was all filled with people doubling down on, you know, just a reminder, Prometheus is a masterpiece. And then you get 10 comments like, no, it isn't. But there are a lot of people who still...
Who on earth is saying that?
Oh, a lot of people. A lot of people.
Because, again, with my tunnel vision, with the blinders that I wear to get myself through life, my only memory of Prometheus is that we did this podcast, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, something.
Where even if we liked parts of it, as we discussed it, and I've brought this up on subsequent podcasts, that the whole thing just turns to sand in your hands. That as we talked about it, it deconstructed itself into black goo.
Right. And, you know, I'm friends with a lot of, like, horror people, and it's a lot of them talking about it. And it's a weird thing, because I think sometimes people get irritated when I don't like certain things, which is fine. That is your right. But the fact that I don't like... I like horror movies, and yet I don't like Alien Covenant, and I'm sure there are movies that are perhaps lesser to which I give a pass, and not Alien Covenant. And there's this idea that all movies should be compared to one another.
No, not at all.
And that's impossible.
Ebert went back to that well several times, talking about how you cannot judge one film by the standards of another for any number of reasons.
Right. I feel like that comes up sometimes, even in that Jurassic World conversation
Ridley
the other
Scott
day.
Ridley Scott is not a brand new filmmaker working on a low budget with many restrictions where we're willing to give a pass because, my God, look at the talent on display. Because it's Ridley Scott, because it's Alien, that raises the bar. That's unavoidable.
Yes. And that's all I wanted to say was that, yeah, we're looking at this in the context of this franchise and this filmmaker and not just... hey, this new monster movie where an alien attacks people. If that's what you wanted out of the movie, you got it. Good job. I mean, that's great. You know, I don't begrudge anyone's enjoyment of the film. I just find it disappointing and frustrating.
As did I.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you, JB, for talking about this movie. Maybe they'll make another one in a few years. I know Ridley Scott has already said he wants to start shooting the next one next year.
Wait a minute.
Maybe stop making these movies.
I'm having a hard time breathing.
A chest burst. I feel bad because I haven't yet done all the information, like the website and all that, and you just, now JB's dead. So you can find us at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter at After This Movie. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We're on YouTube. We're in the iTunes store. If you're a fan of the show, please rate and review us if you have not done so already. Thank you very much to those of you who have. And as always, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. When this show comes out, I think we still have one day left, maybe two, in our Get Out Blu-ray giveaway, courtesy of Universal. Thank you to Jerry Smith for setting that up. You can go to our Twitter page at fthismovie for details about that, or our website, fthismovie.net, and enter to win a Get Out Blu-ray. It's a much better horror movie than this one. And now... I'm wrapping up the show, and the good news is there's a tiny little alien here to say goodbye. I'm going to raise my arms. Oh, look, he's doing it too. Thank you, little alien.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.